Hi, everybody. Welcome to See the Invisible, Living with an Invisible or Rare Disease. My name is Rhonda Jefferson, and thank you so much for taking some time to listen today. I know it's been a while since I've done an actual episode, so I'll just go through a couple updates, and then I'll pick up about where we left off in the last episode, which was how socioeconomic status may affect patient interaction with their providers. But just to kind of get back into the flow of things, you may hear me repeat some things just to kind of tie everything together since it has been a while. I also just want to say that I am in no way a medical, legal, or insurance expert. What I am doing here is providing my opinions and information that I found on the internet. This is not supposed to be any type of medical or insurance or legal advice. It's just my observations based on things that I read, experiences that I've gone through, and just, you know, living life itself with having a rare disease, especially one where it's invisible and it's chronic, and people can make a lot of judgments on us about that. So to give some updates on where I've been, well, we had two rounds of COVID, which actually I will knock on wood and say they were not extremely bad. However, my one son in his second round, the poor kid was, you know, he was so sick comparatively to the first time, and his school kept saying, well, he can come back after 5 days. And I'm like, no, he can't. He's running a fever. And just kind of an FYI, which this had scared me initially. He started losing his hair a few months after he had COVID. And apparently that's something that can happen. It starts a few months after you've had COVID. And it lasts like 6 to 9 months. And then, you know, things start to go back to normal. And it doesn't happen to everyone. It, you know, there's no rhyme or reason that they can see. But unfortunately, my son did have that happen. My main concern initially was, could it be alopecia, since a lot of autoimmune disorders run in my family? And even my sister-in-law, who's been a nurse for like 40 years, when I showed her a picture, that was her first thought. You know, and of course, she's very familiar with our family background. So I was worried, and his doctor wanted him to be seen by a dermatologist. Oh, and that kind of started me on a second journey. But also, we had to change insurance because the insurance I had through my work was running out. And we have had to pick up insurance through my husband's work. I am not going to say names of insurance company or his company or anything, but as bad as it sometimes is with some insurances, I've just hit rock bottom with this insurance company. I mean, it's almost $200 a week. It's like $187, and it's a $10,000 deductible and a $15,900 and something out of pocket per year. So, you know, once I hit the deductible, then we have to pay, I think it's $2,080. We have to pay the 20 until we meet the 15,009 something. The doctor's appointments and specialist appointments and medication doesn't count towards the deductible. It just counts towards the maximum out of pocket. So it's been a nightmare. As well as getting my infusion approved, I was more than 2.5 months overdue on my infusion just because of all of the red tape and the bureaucracy, and nobody could get through to anybody. The people I spoke with at the insurance company, I mean, I don't think she even knew what a deductible was, because all she kept saying was, is there anything else I can help you with? And I'm like, yes, I'm asking about why, you know, payments, my medication and stuff doesn't count towards my deductible, when in my booklet it says, It actually specifically said that the money we pay towards our prescriptions counts towards the deductible. But in emails, I'm being told no, it doesn't. And their response is, well, the booklet may not be updated, or they can't tailor a booklet to every plan, even though the booklet I was looking at was my husband's company name on the front, the plan ID, everything. So it's just been a mess to try to get by. We did try to apply for assistance, and we were denied at every turn. Even like my husband's HR and also a local insurance agent said that even though he had insurance, we could try to apply through the marketplace and we'd probably be approved. Guess what? We weren't. Because they consider my husband's insurance affordable. Now, the 187 is for vision and health. We're paying dental out of pocket to another company because it's like $18 less a week. And the insurance through my husband's company had like a 2-year waiting or lockout period for some things. And my 13-year-old needs his wisdom teeth out. So why I'm getting into all of this actually is I found that even with at times as inaccessible some of my health care was, it's now 10 times worse. Additionally, just everything is going up. My last infusion at the end of 2021 was around $14,000 was charged, and then, you know, they do their negotiations and they drop it down. And this was for a biosimilar, not the name brand. When I had an infusion in February, which I was still under my insurance, so that was, you know, I still had deductibles to meet, but it was a much less deductible. The charge was $22,000. So in like a 2-month time period, it went from $14,000 to $22,000. The thing is, these companies are pretty much pricing themselves out of business because now there's another biosimilar and about every insurance company is converting to that because I think it was around $5,000 or $6,000 when I finally had my next infusion, which was in June, that that was down to like... I think by the time they did their negotiations, it was like $1,800, but it was billed at $5,000 and something. So it's like, okay, so this company is trying to charge $22,000, then they negotiate down, but they're now at a point where, at least according to people I've spoken with, that most insurances aren't going with them anymore because of the cost. And I'm sure the manufacturer that originally developed the drug, they must be much, much higher as well. So anyway, going back to my son and, you know, the dermatologist and everything, there were some interesting things I found out through all of that as well. See, when I was looking at the marketplace, the plans were actually, there was one or two that was pretty much identical to the one that my husband has at work in terms of the approximate cost, you know, say if we were to pay for it through the marketplace, the deductible and the maximum out of pocket and coverage. So it was very, very similar to what my husband had. And it's even through the same company, through the same insurance company. But what I found is when I first needed to start to try to find someone for my son, the first issue was the waiting list for those that were actually on the insurance. The first person that I could contact had a 7-month waiting list. 7 months. Then I did some other, you know, searching, looking for doctors, and I called one out of state that my son had seen before because he has this birthmark that they just want to keep an eye on for him. But he's been fine for years. So they said, unless anything changed, he didn't need to come back. So I called them up. And when I said the name of my insurance company, they said, well, if it's through the marketplace, we don't accept that. So even though it's a plan that has about the same deductible and maximum out of pocket, looking at the description on the marketplace website where you know, it told how much the actual premium was, you know, then it would tell you how much a tax credit was, that type of thing. It was pretty much the same thing. Yet when trying to find a doctor, if it was through the marketplace, they would not accept it. So that was with my son's dermatologist. When we were doing the transition between insurances and I was, you know, looking for dentists, knowing that a 2-year lockout period is not going to work for, you know, my son who has the wisdom teeth he needs to come out. Also, unfortunately, some of the medicine as well as the illness that I have can affect my teeth and jaws. So I kind of need to make sure I have it as well. When, you know, going through that transition, I said I didn't know if we would get it through the marketplace because there were some plans that had it included. And it may not have been for me necessarily, but at least the kids would have it. The person who does the billing told me that they don't accept the insurance if it's through the marketplace. Then, when I got approved for the infusion, and there was, I don't know all the specifics or details, but there was a company that was giving a grant to try to assist with the cost. It may have been the manufacturer. I'm not sure. The infusion center, like, they have people who only work on this, so they look for the best options, but they would not also help cover it if my insurance was through the marketplace. So it's like there are so many limitations. There are more limitations than I'd ever seen before. And if someone desperately needs insurance and they go through the marketplace, odds are it's already a plan that has a high deductible and out of pocket. But then to be hit with all these, oh, we can't take your insurance because it's through the marketplace. That has got to be so, so beyond frustrating. I know what I was feeling. I just know that some things have to change. There's just so much that has to change. It's like where to start. And part of the issue too, I think, with the marketplace is it varies state by state. In the support group that I was in on Facebook, one time I was talking about the change in insurance, and this was a little while back, but someone came in and said, oh, check out the marketplace. They cover everything, da 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 da. And I had been doing research on it, and when I responded that, you know, I wasn't going to be covered and these were the limitations and these were the out-of-pockets, she actually said in the comment back to me that I didn't try hard enough. Someone who was, like, I guess the moderator or the administrator actually stepped in and, you know, said, hey, no negativity. But yeah, that, I was like, no, I have tried. I tried everything. I filed appeals, but then, you know, I got denied. And in some ways that was actually better for me because I would have so many limitations if I got assistance through the Affordable Care Act. So where I think it needs to come down to, and then I'll stop my rant, I am actually writing a letter to, like, the Delaware Insurance Commissioner and different other people, like the governor, everything. But I really have to go back and edit because I'm going through so many things that really, if someone's going to read it and take it seriously, it's got to be more succinct and to the point instead of where I'm rambling. But basically, there needs to be a cap on profits made by medical companies. And this is just my opinion. And when I say medical companies, it goes across the board. If it's a for-profit hospital or medical center, if it's a drug manufacturer, if it's a company that makes the machines for diagnostics, testing and procedures, anything along those lines, there should be a cap. And for the most part, I understand there has to be competition in business. If there's not, then you could have monopolies where prices are inflated more than they're already going right now. So there has to be some, you know, competition in some ways to help balance out the prices and keep things, you know, lower. But when you're looking at medical facilities, these are not things that you can sometimes have that choice. It's not saying I'm going to go to this grocery store, not the other one, because they have better prices or they have a good sale. When you're dealing with healthcare, it could only be that, you know, there's only one facility in your state that might do something. Or, you know, depending on the size of your state, you might have a couple, but they're farther away. You're limited then by what your insurance, what doctors, facilities, your insurance covers. And so, you know, for there to, in some ways, in certain things, there is that monopoly. If you look at medications of, you know, when a medication is first developed, I do understand that company has spent millions, if not billions, developing this drug, and they need to make sure that they recoup those amounts. But then when you have, after the patent, or the patent on the medication run out, and people start making the generic form or biosimilar form, depending on the type of drug, then why are they charging such exorbitant prices when it was this other company that manufactured it and developed it? Looking at it, trying to look at both sides of things, I know that the drug manufacturers need to make at least some profit to make it worth their while to try to develop these drugs, you know, not just out of trying to save their fellow man or woman or anybody. You know, they're, instead of doing it out of the goodness of their heart and wanting to help people, you know, it seems like those prices are too high, especially when a drug has been around for, say, 15 years and each dose costs $1,000 or more when you're, you know, getting into infusions and stuff. When there are thousands of people that have used that medication, they've had to have recouped those funds. Now, just looking at it from the government aspect, I would love it if they would be able to make caps on things while still allowing some funds to be used for more research. You know, if a pharmaceutical company develops a drug and they're only recouping losses or the amount spent to develop the drug, what are they going to use then to do further research to develop more drugs? So, okay, there are things that have to balance out. But when CEOs of different medical companies are making millions in incentives and bonuses, why? Again, healthcare is about people. To me, healthcare shouldn't really be a political issue. It's a humanity issue. So I hate that government even needs to get involved, but in a lot of ways, if they don't, then things will just get out of hand, or more out of hand than they already are. So I just think there really needs to be people who are open to both sides and understanding there has to be a profit in order to keep developing technologies and medications, to keep buildings and staff going, to give incentives for people to work in that healthcare field. And again, I am talking about the actual companies, not, say, the individual doctors, nurses, staff, and all of the people who work so hard within the facilities to keep them going and to care for the patients. And I mean everyone, you know, like my mom worked in the cafeteria for years and years of our local hospital, and everybody knew her. And everybody says we look just alike. So people, I've actually had someone stop me and ask if I was still making the donuts at the at the hospital. And I was like, oh, no, that's my mom, I think, which, you know, considering she's 20 or was 26 years older than me when she passed. Not sure how I felt about that. But, you know, every person that is working in those facilities deserves to get paid a wage to reflect the importance of what they do. Everybody should. So when I say profits, I'm not talking about the individuals themselves that work there. And some are paying back student loans. I'm talking about the, you know, big conglomerates, and there just really needs to be a large session where questions are asked. May not have the answers right then, but, you know, whole committees on this. But with the way things are going right now, with just the way the world is, not just the United States, who knows when or if that can ever happen. So that's my rant for right now. I'm sure I'll have more things happening between now and my next episode. The one thing I will have to say I really dislike is mail order pharmacies, because I've had some medication lost in the mail, and to get refills was like one of the most frustrating things ever. So I just don't like the whole mail pharmacy, especially after, you know, that incident. And then I think it's changed because I haven't had the difficulty that I've had before. But for a while, one of my medications, I would actually have to call and speak with someone every month. It was methotrexate, and they said they required it, so I couldn't just put it on auto ship. So that's a pet peeve. But they, whenever I've looked into it, they say it's because they have the better pricing through the mail order. So, you know, if that's my biggest inconvenience, I would be doing good. But unfortunately, that is not my biggest inconvenience, as I have to have a ton of tests run tomorrow, and I'm just scared of the price. I'm not even scared of the results. It's like, I'll just deal with them when I get them. I'm scared of the cost of the blood tests. But okay, we were looking at disparities in healthcare, and we were looking at impact on different socioeconomic groups. And I had gone over through some things about impact to access to healthcare, impact on the treatment. And we were kind of looking at things that, for one, I found surprising that a lot of people found when there was a scaled down testing approach, meaning, you know, the doctor would actually ask, you know, 20 questions trying to narrow down, okay, could it be this, this, or that? Both the patients usually, as well as the cost, were greatly impacted. You know, so when the doctor would sit there and spend time and try to, you know, either disqualify what, you know, your problem may be, you know, or through process of elimination, come up with a few things that they can focus on. Most people found that to be better because they didn't have to go through as many tests and they didn't have as much of a cost. And that makes sense. But at the same time, some of these larger companies that, you know, have health facilities don't allow for that. My primary physician a few years ago decided to close her practice, and the other person who was within the practice, like the one doctor owned the practice, the other one just worked there. The one who did not own the practice went in with the local hospital and their associates, and, you know, there was a medical facility that they had for your primary care treatment. And so, of course, I wanted to continue seeing her. I kind of have a complicated history, so I wanted to see someone who knew me, where she could sit down and ask me questions and discuss things with me. I saw her one time, and she was like, I'm sorry, they have it where I have to see, you know, this many number of patients an hour, and I'm running behind. And she had to go because she literally had to cover a certain number of patients. And yes, it was something that had just developed that morning, so it wasn't part of my normal or what was listed for the appointment. But at the same time, a couple of years prior, she would have spent an extra 5 or 6 minutes talking to me to try to figure out next steps. Most of the doctors there can't do that anymore. So, and this is where we can look at the impact on the patient and provider interactions. Because when we say healthcare, I think most of us think of business, whether or not we even realize it's business. We think about going through the insurance process. We think about getting the prescriptions approved through the pharmacy. We think of the financial transactions that go through on it. But healthcare has the word care in it. And when you have doctors that can sit there and take an extra 5 minutes with each patient, sometimes that makes all the difference in the world. I had a doctor once who only scheduled a patient every 30 minutes. That way he could discuss things with you. He said if it did get busy and they had some people who were sick, they might eliminate or drop it down to 15 minutes, but I never had to wait when I went to see him. And he would even call me to check on me. He called me on a Sunday once. And one time he reached out to me, and I'm glad he did. He asked me some questions about how I was feeling. And with a response I gave him about my leg, he said, you know, I just want to be safe. I want to send you to have a sonogram done to check for clots. I had a blood clot. So he actually left his practice to go work at medical facilities in lower income neighborhoods. He said he felt he could give back more. And it's like, how can I argue with that? Because he's right. I mean, he cared for everybody that he saw. So when patients are looked at more like customers, providers are going to look at things differently. Looking at, say, the whole marketplace situation where the doctor's offices would accept, you know, the same insurance for one person who got it through an employer, but not accept it through someone who got it through the marketplace, they're looking at the bottom line and not the patient. Like I said, I try to see both sides. Maybe they need to look at the bottom line because they have so many other expenses, such as malpractice insurance, running the facility, making sure all of the maintenance and upkeep on their current machines and, you know, anything they use for providing the healthcare up to date, or that they've purchased new equipment when needed. So it's a back and forth with balancing it out. And that's where I think, too, having a cap on any type of medical manufacturer, including of equipment, would help everybody. And I have to wonder then if doctors that do accept the insurance for marketplace, and I'm just using my state as the example, I don't know if it's the same in other states, if they look at that and know that they're not going to get as much and maybe spend a little less time with the patient. I am not saying every doctor does. Please don't take it into thinking that every doctor does. Some doctors don't even look at insurance at all because they don't want that to impact their opinion. Because, you know, I've tried to ask my doctor sometimes something about insurance, and she's like, I don't even know about that. That's why we have the office staff, the administrators, to try and take care of all of that so that, you know, the doctor just focuses on the patient. There's also a perception that the patients can have towards the doctor. And I know myself when I was on Medicaid for maybe about a year, year and a half, somewhere around there. It wasn't incredibly long. I did feel myself, I felt bad about giving the doctors that insurance card. I knew they weren't making as much you know, in regards to the return, you know, what the insurance would pay. And I was afraid by giving that information to in front of other people, you know, because it's still an office, you have to give the card, that they would judge me. And that affected my perception on everything. I wondered if the doctor was judging me. I wondered if his staff was judging me. I wondered if people in the, you know, the waiting room were judging me. And that's something I shouldn't, or any patient should have to worry about. So these perceptions, though, these thoughts that were in my mind could lead me to look at the way the doctor was treating me and maybe even apply things to that treatment that weren't true. Was possibly was I so, you know, concerned about what they would think of me that I didn't perceive their actions or their questions, their wording, to be the way that they intended it. Doctors also need to make sure that they're not making distinctions between patients, that if they have three patients that come in the hour with similar situations, you know, let's not, you know, say they're completely different, but very similar situations, and the doctor spends 10 minutes with one patient but 25 minutes with the other, you know, even if all of the patients aren't aware of the other, we can see that could be an issue. What it can also do is, you know, if a doctor is short with a patient, doesn't ask a lot of questions, it may make the patient less likely to open up to them. If, you know, they are, you know, from the very first time meet them, just very quick, looking at the paperwork and just, you know, 1-2 word answers and just prescribe something or says, here's a bunch of tests to go to, the patient isn't going to feel heard. And while I did give an example of where my doctor did say, you know, she had to get going, that was one time out of I don't know how many dozens of times that I'd seen her. And I realized she was on that type of constraint. And, you know, the doctor that owned the practice, she actually kind of semi-retired. She's working with hospice patients now. So that takes a lot. You know, those are really some of the unsung heroes, you know, that know when they're going into a hospice treatment that, you know, that the patient is going to die soon. So there are plenty of doctors out there who genuinely care for their patients, where mine will go in and look at messages on Sunday night in the patient portal and respond on a Sunday. You know, so there's for the most part, I think most doctors genuinely care, or at least they start out generally caring. I don't know if they, you know, maybe along the lines they start looking at money a little bit more, but the medical profession is hard. And I think most doctors have that knowledge that when they go into it, it's not just going to be, you know, instant glory, instant hero complex, you know, that they're going to have to get to know their patients. They're going to have to provide that level of care and not just, you know, brief conversations. And they really want to get, you know, down to the bottom of what's troubling their patient. But as time goes by, I think a lot become disenchanted because they probably have so many people who have difficulties, you know, making payments or getting the healthcare that they need. They just kind of become aloof in a sense, you know, not as open as they may have once been. And again, you know, this is kind of my opinion on my experiences, on some people who've described their experiences to me. You know, it's just too much like a business with the real meaning of the word care no longer really in the equation for some people. And if this is being treated like a business, think of it this way. If you go to buy a new car and you walk in with holes in your jeans, you know, old boots, things like that. Because my husband works outside a lot. There have been times we went to, you know, do things that were major financial transactions that he was in. You know, jeans that had a tear in them, jeans that had, you know, asphalt on them. You know, that was the way he made his living, and he couldn't just get off work anytime. And, you know, we had to make compromises in doing that. But you have to wonder if someone walks in wearing something like that, and, you know, admittedly, I probably was not dressed to the nines, or you have someone come in who, you know, is wearing nice jewelry, nice tailored clothes, things that look more expensive. We all know that the salesman is going to, you know, kind of go towards the people with, you know, the better clothes, the better what they perceive as socioeconomic status. And they look at other things too. When I bought my first new car on my own, I did have my parents come with me because I was like maybe 23, 24, somewhere around there. And it was my first new car. I'd bought a used one before. But the salesman just kept looking directly at my father. And I was questioning things because I'd gone in and done my research and I knew how much something should cost. And I really wasn't going to put up with the fact if I felt they were trying to gyp me. And still, you know, this was 20-some years ago, the salesman just kept looking at my father. It's not socioeconomic status, but it was gender-based. And, you know, I just did not feel comfortable with that entire transaction, and I never went to them again. So this is what having healthcare as a business can open itself up to, you know, when someone is on those time and money constraints, where time is literally money. Something too, that when these studies look into things, I think that there needs to be recognition as well that people don't always share positive experiences, but they do share negative. And to a degree, it's probably that they don't share positive experiences because when you go in to discuss anything with anyone, then you expect a certain level of professionalism and care, whether it's a doctor or even a business transaction, like I mentioned before, with buying a car. When you go in there, you expect things to be done correctly. On the other hand, if something goes really, really bad, most people are more apt to communicate that in reviews, you know, in discussions with other people through word of mouth. Only if, say, someone has had a really bad experience and their next experience is good, may they go out and really say, hey, this place was fantastic, you know, this doctor was great. But it's sad if that is the case, that it had to be a negative experience that made a patient or customer appreciate the more positive experiences. I also feel, at least in myself, that the positive experiences, as far as what we remember going forward, we don't necessarily remember them on the top of our head like we would a really negative experience. So I think that's how humans are hardwired. But one study that does emphasize the impact between availability, reimbursement towards physicians is there was something called the Medicaid parity provision, and that was in the Affordable Care Act that took place between around 2013 and 14 when this Medicaid parity started to really go into effect with rate reimbursement. So, you know, for those who accepted Medicaid, the reimbursement percentage that they would receive went up. And a study was made, you know, in the states where this had gone into effect. So just from the study that it was showing, it may not have happened all at the same time. But when the study was completed, what they found is that just your normal routine visits to your primary care and just appointments in general increased by 7.7%. That may not seem like a lot, but when you look at 1,000 people, that's 77 people, you know, if I'm doing the math right in my head. There was also a correlation between the percentage of the increases to the increase of reimbursement. So while it did not give any numbers specifically to different states, let's just say if one state increased their reimbursement by 20% and another district increased it by 6%, they would see that higher increase in primary care appointments in the location that had the 20% reimbursement increase and a much lower increase to those that increased it less. And part of the reason going back to that is patient or doctors are under much more of a time constraint because they have to see as many patients in a certain amount of time to bring in the same amount of money to keep paying the bills and to, you know, understand that, you know, the reimbursement may be less with this or that patient. And even though they have a staff that helps with the accounting and does all of that stuff, they still feel the pressure because they are probably given updates on what they need to do and how many people they need to see to keep things viable. Now, right now, the doctor where I have my infusions through, she has an infusion center, and someone came in. She had someone come in to see how many patients the nurse who was providing the infusions would need to do per hour. And it was some insane number. It was like 5 people per hour. And while that may not seem like a lot, that was an average. There were some people whose infusion lasted hours. So that would mean, okay, for 2 or 3 patients where there's only like 5 beds, I think it's up to 6 now, but there were only 5. Okay, if you have 3 patients who have a long infusion scheduled, those 2 remaining seats are going to have to be like continually rotated. You know, getting 7 or 8 of those people per hour with the shorter infusions or, you know, other medical needs that they have to have done, there has to be a constant turnover in those seats. That was physically impossible. I mean, literally, it was like literally physically impossible for anybody to be able to keep up that rate, as well as what if there was a problem accessing a port, if the patient had a port, or if, you know, they just couldn't access a vein at all, that adds to the time, or if there's an emergency where they need to assist a patient. But everything comes down to the bottom line. And what patients, it seems like, begin to see is the doctors where there was the highest percentage in reimbursement were able to spend a little more time, interact with their patients. And the patients saw that and probably were much more comfortable about making an appointment with that doctor again instead of feeling rushed and like their feelings and, you know, their feelings and their health didn't matter as much. Now, I know that I said that I was going to probably repeat or go over a few things again to kind of get back into the swing of things or keep the flow going. I wanted to go over the things that myself and my family have kind of gone through over the past few months because it's actually increased my knowledge of the disparities and where they come from. Like, I don't think I really understood what was meant when I did see the medical parity information or the Medicaid parity provision before. I can see that now with the fact that not all of the providers that I go to accept the same insurance, except it's through the marketplace and not through an employer. So they make that decision based on that. And that's just outraged me more. And not necessarily to the to even the doctors or their staff who has to, you know, tell you basically that we can't or don't accept your insurance, but with just the whole healthcare community in general. And so I'm going to end here. You know, it's kind of adding to some things that I've said previously, but also having new and varying perspectives on things, and as well having a lot more frustration in just everything in the healthcare system, from insurance to massive profits that are being made by, you know, insurance providers, by big, large companies that have some type of medical facilities. So I will be getting newer information out with my next episode, but I'll probably be adding a lot more examples because I've had more examples come up in my life more recently. If there's any topics that you would like me to cover, that will have my contact information in the description of the episode. I hope everybody did have a good 4th of July if you're listening from the United States. If not, I hope everybody had a good weekend. I will talk to you all soon, and everybody, please take care of yourself, all three, physically, emotionally, and mentally, because our bodies all work together in all of those fields to make a healthier person. All right. I will talk to you guys later. Bye.